Well, this morning, we are continuing a certain section in the Sermon on the Mount. Do you remember what the topic is of this section in chapter 6? It's a topic that extends all the way through verse 18, which is part of our text for this morning. We're just going to be looking at verses 16 through 18. But if in case you forget, all you need to do is go back to chapter 6, verse 1, because that lays out the topic that is being addressed in all of these passages that we've been considering now for the last month or so. Jesus begins by saying, "Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven." So what is the topic that Jesus is addressing? He's talking about outward righteousness, right? Now, we know from earlier in the sermon that righteousness is not just outward, right? Jesus cares about the heart as much as he cares about our outward actions, our outward righteousness. But he's talking about the aspects of righteousness, the aspects of religion that are observable by others. And what sorts of acts of righteousness or religion are visible to other people? Well, three big ones would have been the ones that he's addressing in this passage, right? He starts out by talking about our giving. Other people can see your giving, especially if you're doing it in such a way that others will see what you're giving. Other people can also see our praying. And then finally, as we're seeing today in verses 16 through 18, others can also see our fasting. So these topics are common with one another in that they do relate to this matter of outward righteousness. And Jesus' point in regard to all of these is that we aren't supposed to be doing these things so others can see us. And if it comes down to it, and you're having a hard time doing that in the right way, then you ought to be intentional about being secretive, not doing these things in a way that other people are going to see you, in order to make it very clear that what you are doing for God. And so when Jesus picks up in verse 16, he says this about fasting. "When you fast, do not look gloomy like the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces that their fasting may be seen by others. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, that your fasting may not be seen by others, but by your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you." Now, fasting is something that's a little bit unfamiliar to us. This would have been a standard practice in Judaism during the first century, so Jesus wouldn't have had to explain this at all. But my guess is that for most of us, our understanding of what fasting is, what its purpose is perhaps a little bit fuzzy. And one of the commentators on this passage describes the purpose of fasting like this. He says, "The purpose of fasting is to remind oneself that God is uppermost in life, even over basic human drives." And so in light of that statement, what did fasting usually involve setting aside? Yeah, we're talking about food, right? That's not the only thing that can be fasted from. Paul alludes in 1 Corinthians 7 to the idea that you could abstain from sexual relations in marriage for a spiritual purpose. Now, he doesn't recommend that as being something that should be a way of life, but there are other things, of course, that we can abstain from, and we can call that fasting. But generally, when fasting is talked about in Scripture, we're talking about food that is being abstained from. And the purpose, as he says, is to remind us that God is uppermost in life. Can you survive without food? Can you survive without God? Sometimes we lose sight of that, don't we? For us, we don't go a day without eating. We recognize that we need to do that. But we oftentimes will go a day without thinking about our relationship with the Lord, without praying to him, without seeking his grace, seeking his strength. And so fasting is an opportunity for us to show God, and perhaps more importantly ourselves, that God truly is more important to us than the food which he provides for us. So fasting is an opportunity for us to redirect our minds to the Lord. Let me ask you, is there benefit to fasting if you don't use it as an opportunity to redirect your mind to the Lord? There may be certain benefits, but I think that the benefits spiritually are pretty limited, right? So you might think, well, I'm going to do something to be more healthy by fasting. Is that a spiritual action then? Not necessarily. So we want to make sure that if, as we're looking at this issue of fasting, that we understand that it is specifically that it is pointing us to the Lord, showing our dependence upon him, showing that he comes first, that we're looking to him for our provision. That's where it takes its significance. It's not in the act itself. So fasting is not a magical activity. It's not something that we do just because we think that the Lord is going to do good things for us by doing it, but it's an opportunity for us to redirect our hearts and minds to the Lord. Now, as I already mentioned, fasting was an important part of the Jewish religion. And actually, the Gospels speak of a particular group of people who would take fasting seriously. Who was that? The Pharisees did that. Do you remember what the Pharisee said in the story that Jesus tells about the Pharisee and the tax collector? It says, I fast twice a week. And that actually seems to have been a fairly common practice among the Pharisees. It seems that oftentimes they would have set aside Mondays and Thursdays as days for fasting. And so that was an important part of their religious practice during that day. But it wasn't something that they made up. You can find examples of this in the Old Testament. Actually, on the Day of Atonement, fasting was something that was expected. It's the one place in the Old Testament where it's actually commanded. And then John the Baptist's disciples also made a practice of fasting. And so this question came up later on in Jesus' ministry with his disciples. And people were asking, well, why do our disciples fast? This is not the time to fast. Now, I think it is significant that Jesus says when the bridegroom is gone, then his disciples will fast. So in other words, that's not something that just completely goes away with the coming of Christ. But at least at that time, that wasn't the emphasis. They were not focusing on that kind of fasting, that kind of outward visible humiliation before the Lord. So this was a common practice. Sometimes it would be accompanied by a very dramatic outward display. What were some things that people might do to show that they were fasting, to show that they were maybe mourning or that they were confessing their sins? They were doing something that was very significant spiritually. What would they do to show that? Yeah, they would tear their clothes. They would wear sackcloth. They would put ashes on their head, right? Very, very dramatic outward visible demonstration of, well, to use the language that Jesus is talking about here, gloominess or disfigurement. And I don't think Jesus would suggest that everyone who ever tore their clothes or everyone who ever wore sackcloth and ashes was necessarily guilty of hypocrisy. But we can understand how in a culture that valued that kind of an expression of humility and dependence upon the Lord, that could become a very external thing. And that's exactly what Jesus is concerned about in this larger context. He doesn't want us to be doing religious activity so that others will see us. He wants us to be doing religious activities in order to please the Lord, in order to honor him. So oftentimes the people who did this during Jesus' day, they weren't doing it in a genuine, heartfelt, authentic way. They were being thought of as especially spiritual, and they wanted other people to think of them in that way. So they wanted to draw attention to their practice of fasting. And I think that brings up an important point that sometimes gets missed in our discussions about hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is one of those words that we throw around quite a bit. And it's very easy for us, I think, to apply it in situations that maybe it's not quite referring to what Jesus is talking about in this passage. A hypocrite is not necessarily someone who fails to live up to a professed standard. I think that's important for us to understand. Have you ever failed to live up to a professed standard in your life? I certainly have. I do it all the time. And we recognize that that is a reality of the Christian life, that we are in a struggle with sin. We are in a struggle with temptation. And while there is an element of hypocrisy, if we're thinking about this as a matter of presenting yourself as something that you aren't in that case, we also have to understand that Jesus is really getting to the heart of hypocrisy here. And in that case, he's not just saying, well, you know, the problem is when you're not living up to the professed standard that you hold. Because you can do that, and then you can fall, and then you can repent, and then the Lord will forgive you. It's not that you're being a hypocrite, it's that you're being human. It's that you're reflecting the fact you have a sinful nature. But it's a very different thing when somebody says, I am going to present myself as being something completely different than I know in my heart of hearts I am. That is a malignant kind of hypocrisy that Jesus is very, very much going to condemn in this passage, and something that is condemned throughout Scripture. It is one thing to acknowledge and be honest with our sin struggles and acknowledge that we are on the path to something greater. We are growing in our Christ-likeness. It is another thing entirely to present oneself as the standard of holiness, as a standard of right religion, and then in your heart to coldly, in a calculated way, live completely differently. That is what Jesus is getting at in these passages. So a hypocrite is somebody who is just concerned about the show. And so really the point that Jesus is making in verse 16 is this: do not showcase your fasting. So you may have some things that are important to you in your home, And if they're important to you, then you may display them, right? You may display them in some sort of a cabinet with glass. Maybe you have some sort of a showcase or something where you put these things that are important that you want other people to see because you value them. And that is exactly what we do not want to do with our good works. That is exactly what we do not want to do with our outward acts of religion. We don't want to be displaying that for everyone else to see, for everyone else to notice. Now, is Jesus telling his disciples the answer is not to fast? That would be an easy solution, wouldn't it? Most of us are already there. But that is not what he's telling his disciples. Remember that Jesus himself fasted for 40 days. You remember that? Way back in chapter 4? It's actually not that far away, but it feels like it's been a long time ago since we talked about that. So Jesus himself did fast, and later Christians in the book of Acts are also said to have fasted. And Jesus himself implied that this was something that they would continue later on as time went on and he went back to heaven. So this is something that is a part of the Christian life. But we need to make sure that as we do it, we're doing it in a particular way. And so Jesus commands his followers not to look gloomy. This word is actually used one other place in the New Testament, and it's used in Luke 24. Can you guess how that word is applied in that context? It has to do with the two disciples walking on the road to Emmaus. It actually says there that their faces were gloomy, right? And of course, in that context, it was because they were mourning, right? Jesus had been killed. As far as they knew, he was still dead. And so that's the one other place where we see that in the New Testament. And that's the idea that we've got here. So you can imagine what this would look like. If you were trying to present yourself in a way that matched what it looked like if you were a disciple of Jesus mourning his death, this is a pretty dramatic look that you're trying to convey to others. So it's a point of, it's making a show of looking sad, making a show of looking put out. It's a part of our nonverbal communication, which we are all better at than we probably realize, right? We are very, very good at nonverbal communication. So do you know when your children are upset, even if they don't communicate it to you verbally? Do you know when your spouse is upset, even if they're not saying anything? Most of us can have a pretty good idea because of the countenance, because of the look on their face. And Jesus is describing about an intentional presentation of yourself that results in people asking the question, well, what's going on with him? It's seeking to raise the question, right? And so as soon as somebody asks, hey, what in the world is wrong with you? Well, your response is, well, I'm fasting. I'm really wanting to seek the Lord, and I'm trying to be spiritual, and so I'm fasting. And, you know, there are a couple different ways you could respond to that. We're familiar with Jesus' teaching, and so we would probably instantly think, okay, you probably shouldn't be doing that. But in Jesus' day, without the benefit of this teaching, we might think, well, that's a really spiritual person. I mean, I don't do that. I haven't done that in a really long time, so that person must be really spiritual. And so it might raise them in our minds, in our evaluation of them. And so this is what Jesus is telling us that we need to be on guard against. These people are doing this because they want their religiosity to be perceived by others, and they want to be respected because of that. But of course, Jesus says the same thing about that he's already said about these other areas of hypocrisy, right? There is a reward for this kind of hypocrisy. Other people will notice. Other people will ask, and they'll find out if you tell them. But will you get any reward from God out of that? Nope. There is no reward to be had from the Lord. The only reward is whatever respect you can get from other people. And so we need to be directing our attention not to those who might see us, not to those that we could explain to others how spiritual we are by all these spiritual practices we're doing. We need to be doing this for the Lord. And so Jesus says in verses 17 and 18, when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, that your fasting may not be seen by others, but by your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. That you see there in verse 17, that's what we would call an emphatic you. In other words, in the Greek, you don't actually have to say you in order to know that you is the one being addressed. But it's there anyway, specifically to show the fact that there's a contrast between the you that Jesus is addressing and the other people that are doing this. Now, who are the other people in this context? It's the hypocrites, right? So Jesus' disciples are a contrast. Jesus' disciples have no business engaging in this kind of behavior. They're supposed to be different. And so what are they supposed to do differently? Well, they're supposed to anoint their head and wash their face. And this really just seems to be expressing normal hygiene, right? So whatever your normal hygiene is in your culture, Jesus is saying, keep on doing that. Don't make a point of presenting yourself as if you are a complete mess because of your fasting, because of your spiritual practices. The goal is to present yourself in such a way that nobody thinks anything is unusual. Nobody thinks anything is different in the slightest. And that goes back to this idea that we talked about earlier, the sackcloth, the ashes, the tearing of clothes. It's not something that I know that I don't think Jesus would condemn outright or entirely, but we have to understand it's when we start focusing on the externals that we miss what it is that Jesus wants us to be doing by these practices. And so we really should avoid outward displays of righteousness, whatever that looks like. We shouldn't draw attention to that. Now, does that mean that we should engage in deception? Somebody asks you, are you fasting? Do you have to tell them, no, I'm not fasting? No, that's not what Jesus is saying, right? It's not that we have to go to that length in order to keep people from knowing, but the point is we keep it quiet. We don't draw attention to it. And whatever that looks like for us, we're avoiding making that something that other people are noticing about us. Now, what is the purpose of us doing that? Engaging in our fasting in that way? It's that the Father's going to see us. And what is the Father going to do when he sees us? He's going to reward us. And as I said several weeks ago, it's hard for us to wrap our mind around the fullness of what that reward means. But we know that it's certainly better than any temporary approval that we can get from other people by engaging in that kind of outward hypocritical display. And so we need to be adjusting our focus. When we engage in the outward external aspects of the Christian religion, we need to make sure that we are doing it for the Lord in order to be seen by him. And we probably have to remind ourselves of that rather frequently so that we don't get sidetracked by others when they notice that we're doing things that make us look spiritual. There's nothing that we can do that is so secret that God won't reward it. And that's a frightening thing if we're thinking about sin, right? There's no sin that is secret. There's no sin that goes unpunished. Whether we end up paying the penalty for that or whether Christ takes it on himself. But on the positive side, you cannot be too secretive about the good things that you do because God will see those things and he will reward them. God will not forget those things that you do. Well, you might be thinking at this point, well, this is an interesting lesson, or maybe it's not interesting. But either way, you might be thinking, it doesn't really apply to me, right? Why wouldn't it apply to you? Because this isn't something that we do, right? And I'm up here this morning including myself in that. This is not something that I practice. And I think that the fact that we're talking about the subject this morning and that Jesus is assuming that his disciples will do this raises the question as to whether maybe we ought to be looking at this issue afresh and seeing whether it is something that we should be incorporating into our lives. I'm not sure that this isn't something that we've missed as 21st century American Christians. I think that this is something that people elsewhere around the world, they tend to practice. It's something that other Christians in other centuries have observed as being necessary. As I've already said, Jesus assumed that his disciples would do this. And so it's probably something that we should re-examine. But if we do that, what is the warning? Don't do it for the wrong reasons. Don't do it in order to be seen by other people. Don't do it so you can be perceived as more spiritual. If that were the case, it wouldn't be very hard to establish yourself as one of the most spiritual people in the American church, right? Because so many people do not engage in this practice. And you could have this subtle feeling of pride that says, well, look at all these other people that don't fast, and I fast. You know, I'm a top-level Christian because of that. And that's not the direction that we want to go. So I do want to encourage us to think about what this might look like in our lives. And certainly, I don't want to minimize the aspect of fasting from food, because that clearly is what the Bible normally means when it's talking about fasting. So that's something that we have to think about. But there are other kinds of fasting that can be useful for us as well, aren't there? What's one of the kinds of fasting that we often hear about nowadays? Social media fast. How many of us might that help spiritually? Yeah, I think that there's a lot of wisdom in that. And of course, Jesus would not have spoken about something like that specifically because that is a unique struggle, a unique temptation that we face in our world. But I'll just be honest with you. There are times when I feel like I can't put down my phone long enough in order to commune with God and to seek him and to have the kind of relationship with him that he calls me to. Have you ever felt that? There are times when things take hold of our life, they take hold of our hearts, and we need to remind ourselves that God has first place And it's not these other things. And of course, it extends well beyond that. So whatever your particular hobby might be, it might be that you have a hobby that has just become all-consuming in your life. And it keeps you from serving your family the way you should. It keeps you from serving your church the way that you should. Keeps you from engaging in a personal relationship with the Lord. And I think that when you begin to recognize that that's the case, when the Holy Spirit brings that to your attention, then there is nothing wrong with taking this same principle of fasting from food and saying, I am going to apply that to these other things as well. And that's going to look a little bit different for each one of us, isn't it? But again, the point is that we are reminding ourselves that God comes first. As important as we may feel like these other things are, as much as we may enjoy them, God is more important and we desire him even more. And we may need to remind ourselves of that if those things begin to have a controlling force in our lives. Now, I do think I need to clarify, because we're talking about this issue of fasting, it's not a danger that I think many of us are particularly in danger of. But the New Testament argues very strongly against asceticism. And what is asceticism? Oftentimes, I think it's well exemplified by the medieval ideal of a monk, right? What does a monk do? Well, all sorts of different things, right? Maybe spends hours in prayer, sort of sequesters himself away from other people, recites things, maybe sits on top of a pole. You know, all sorts of things that a medieval monk might do. And what is the benefit of that spiritually? As an end in and of themselves, not a thing, right? And so we need to be very careful. If we start looking into this practice and we start implementing it into our lives, it's very important that we not then reach the conclusion that, well, these are the things that are making me spiritual, or these are the things that make me more spiritual than other people, or this is the basis for my acceptance before God. There were people, even at the time of the writing of the New Testament, that were already beginning to tell people, you can't eat those foods, or you can't be married. You need to live a celibate life in order to be pleasing to the Lord. And of course, that kind of thinking took hold. And as time went on, the medieval church really became wrapped up in these externals. And so they had these different tiers that you could be on as a Christian, depending on how much you abstained from. And the New Testament does not present Christianity in that light. There are times when we need to abstain from things. If it's going to injure our brother or our sister, then we shouldn't do it. If we know that it's harming us spiritually, then we shouldn't do it. But we're not doing those things as an end in and of themselves. And we're certainly not doing that to be seen as more spiritual than others around us. I think that that is relevant to the growing conversation about Lent in Protestant circles. You may have noticed this. It seems like more and more Protestants are somewhat intrigued by the Roman Catholic practice of Lent. And there are different reasons for that. It is interesting. The early reformers would not have been excited about that. They were very much concerned about throwing away those old practices, those things that were distracting people from the ultimate cause of our salvation, which is the death of Jesus Christ for our sins on the cross. But I do think that it's important that we recognize, as some Protestant Christians, as some evangelical Christians are being intrigued by that idea of fasting in some way at predictable seasons in the year, that we keep that larger context in mind, that this is not what earns favor with God, and this is not ultimately the end goal of our spirituality. This is just something that reminds us of dependence upon God, which is, of course, the truth, whether we recognize it or not. So what is the concluding application of these three sections that we've talked about? We've talked about giving, we've talked about prayer, we've talked about fasting. What is the application of these things? Well, there's an indirect application that says I think we should do them, right? So let's start with that as a starting point. So if we're not giving, if we're not praying, if we're not fasting in any sense, then we probably ought to make room for those things in our lives. But Jesus isn't really emphasizing that point. That's not what he's focusing on in this passage. What is the application that he's focusing on? Once these things are actually present in your life, once we're doing them faithfully, don't do them in order to be seen by other people. Whatever you are doing for the Lord, make sure it's truly for the Lord. And go out of your way to keep it secret in order to guard your own heart. Because we all have a flesh, we all have a sinful nature that will very readily latch onto these things. You know, you may not get much credit for these things anymore in our broader American culture, but you might get some credit for them in the context of the church. And so we need to make sure that we are examining our hearts so that we are doing what we're doing for the right reason. and setting up guards in place so that we are making sure that we're not doing things in order to be seen by others. And in light of that, I'd like us to conclude our service this morning by turning to song number 370. This is a song that talks about our commitment to living our lives for the Lord. And if that's something that you have not been consistent with in recent days, let me encourage you to take direction from these verses, from these passages that we've been looking at for the last several weeks. Remind yourself that God expects this of us and that we need to be faithful in practicing the religious activities that God calls us to. But we also need to make sure that we're doing them for the right reason. And so if you find yourself going through this repetitive cycle of the same spiritual activity, we're in church every Sunday, we're in church every Wednesday, we do the same ministries week after week, but we've lost sight of why we're doing these things, remind yourself as we sing this song together this morning of why it is we are doing what we do. We do what we do out of a desire to live for the Lord.